This morning on Community Close-Up, we're going to talk with Jean Allert, who is the founder of Samaritan Women Institute for Shelter Care, providing care and restoration to victims of domestic sex trafficking. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning.
Before we get into what your organization does, could you define the crime of human trafficking for us?
Sure. Human trafficking involves the recruiting, harboring, transporting, provisioning, obtaining, soliciting, or advertising of persons. And I know those are a lot of verbs, but essentially what it means is it is a crime that exploits vulnerable people for the production of goods or services or commercial sex.
What is the extent, Jean, of sex trafficking here in the United States?
Well, right now it is the second largest and fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world. In the United States, sex trafficking is the largest of the two main types of trafficking, between labor trafficking and sex trafficking. The exact numbers cannot be known because this is a crime that operates in the dark and under secrecy. And so it's very difficult, but Department of Justice estimates anywhere from 100 to 300,000 American children are currently sex slaves in this country, and we have no idea how many adults.
So the driving force really is, we're talking money.
We're talking money, and we're talking about just the greed of what we want, our satisfying our appetites, whether that's for commercial products or commercial sex.
You've worked with women for a long time, over 10 years, actually 12 years now. With the women, with the victims, what's at the root of why they get into this?
You know, the majority of the women we serve, upwards of 94%, were victims of childhood sexual abuse. And so there was abuse in the home. About 90%, 87 actually, came from homes where there was substance abuse in the home. So there might have been two parents or one parent, where the child is raised in a very inconsistent, neglectful, perhaps abusive household. Oftentimes we see that girls have run away from those situations. They may have a period of homelessness. And then once out on the street, they become very exposed as a vulnerable person. It's very easy for a trafficker to identify. You know, one statistic that is shared is that a runaway child will be approached by a trafficker within 48 hours. And so we've really let our kids down. We have millions of children who are estranged from family in this country. You know, the population that we've served, 70% of them grew up without a father in the home. And so, you know, when it's a young girl or a young boy looking for that male influence in their life, they're going to keep looking to fill that void.
So a lot of cases, if we look on the TV, we see, well, foreigners are brought into the country, and that's how this human trafficking thing is going. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
If you think of it this way, any industry, any business where people can be invisible is ripe for exploitation. So you don't see who's back in the kitchen. You don't see who's back behind the scenes of the convention center. So yeah, absolutely, there can be exploited persons there. But we also have to recognize that exploitation, particularly commercial sexual exploitation, is very much an American problem.
We're talking to Jean Allert, who is the founder of the Samaritan Women Institute for Shelter Care. How much does the internet have play into this?
You know, it's a huge channel for recruitment. It's very easy for predators to be using that somewhat anonymous platform to be able to identify people of vulnerability. You know, our kids are on chat rooms or gaming sites or websites where they're sharing very disclosing information about themselves. You know, maybe, oh, my mom's not home again tonight. Oh, I've got to make dinner for myself alone tonight. Oh, I wish I could get out of here. And, you know, a predator just has to see that's an opening. It's an invitation.
Are there regulations that you would recommend for the internet to maybe kind of curb some of this?
Well, it is important for Americans to understand that the internet is an unregulated communications platform. We don't have the CDC or the Communications Decency Act that imposes particular guidelines for use. So really, it's the Wild West. Anything goes online. And we're beginning to realize that that's a failed experiment. We're certainly with Backpage and seeing that that was a website that was retailing children for sex, that we're seeing that that doesn't work. And we have to begin to hold people accountable. You know, I'm not coming at this from the technical side, so I don't know what technical solutions might be in place. But I will say that unless the citizenry wants it, right now, there's too much money to be made in the online universe. And so until we want change and we advocate for it, it's not going to happen.
Recently, I interviewed Elizabeth Wessels Martin, who is the director of the Center for Women and Families in Louisville, and she was talking about trade shows. She was talking about the Kentucky Derby and things like that, bringing people in. Is that what you're seeing with human trafficking?
Absolutely. The Super Bowl is the number one human trafficking event in the United States. Around the world, it's the World Cup. So when you have those large congregational, lots of money, lots of perhaps drinking, you know, just that kind of conduct, there is going to be a need for people to the demand side to satisfy their desires. And so it is not unheard of to have girls that are shipped in from other states, maybe surrounding communities. And so if you look at something like the Derby, in order to meet the need of the people who, I say need with very loose air quotes, you understand. But in order to meet the demand, they will likely bring in girls from neighboring communities or from your rural areas, because there's a tremendous amount of discretionary money to be made.
Now, how is Kentucky cracking down on human trafficking?
You know, I'm impressed that you have a relatively small force. You have maybe one or two very strong advocates in law enforcement. But certainly even this has reached the governor's office. And as far as being committed to raising awareness about this, and that's how it starts, because we need the citizenry to realize that it's a problem. Then we need the citizenry to mobilize, whether that's legislatively or the creation of services. Now, in the area of law enforcement investigation, I would say that you're somewhat hampered to get ahead of the problem because you have a small force working on it. But it is one of those things, those conditions, that the more you see it, the more you'll respond to it. And so I think you need to pay attention to the numbers. I think you need to pay attention to the news programs that are showing up in the newspaper or on the television that lets you know that this is real and this is a problem. I think you need to have direct conversation with your law enforcement, whether that's the sheriff or your local, you know, police officer, and say, are you trained on this issue? Are you trained to even identify this as a problem? And so that's going to change your data landscape, which then also helps to create other social change.
We're talking to Jean Allard, who is the director of the Institute for Shelter Care. How are these women, and I guess in some cases children, coming to you at the Institute?
Sure. So we, in our residential program, take survivors from across the United States. About 23 different states have referred to us, because it's important for us to understand that these are really persona non grata. These people don't belong kind of anywhere. In some cases, you might have a girl in rural Kentucky that just gets exploited in Kentucky, but more often, she's going to get moved around the United States. And so we find that our girls have been in a lot of different jurisdictions before they come to us. We've also learned that it can be very healing for them to be moved out of their area of exploitation. And so if she comes from Oklahoma all the way up to Maryland, she automatically feels safer. And so just being away from those relationships and those different temptations, it has been significant in their healing.
What would you say are ways that we can raise awareness here in Kentucky about this issue of human trafficking?
Well, I think it's very important that this show up in your schools. One, because we need to make children aware of the fact that there are predators, that not everybody online is who they say they are. It's not to scare our children, but to make them a bit wiser. I think there's also a deficit in parents understanding all of the stimuli that come at kids today, all of the stuff that they have available to them with the online technologies. I think parents can go dizzy over the amount of things that are coming at their kids, but they still need to be informed, because ultimately, if that kid does not have a safe place that he or she can go when they are aware of something, maybe a friend is getting involved with, maybe it's a 16-year-old girl and her friend is now quote-unquote dating a 35-year-old guy. Well, that friend has the opportunity to step into that situation. So we need to start, I think, in the schools. That's very critical. We need to go from middle school on up, frankly. We need to have opportunities for parents to learn a great deal about what our kids are exposed to. I think we need to be more discerning consumers of the media, what we allow into our home in terms of the content we allow, the movies, the music, the ways in which the whole pimp culture is somewhat celebrated here in America, and how we normalize that sends a message to kids. And I think sometimes we don't think about that. But then I think for an active citizenry, we need to be as informed as we can so that we create better laws.
when you have these victims come to you, how are you healing them and restoring them?
Sure. So we operate two things. We have a residential program called the Samaritan Women. And in the residential program, it is a long-term program, which means it can go up to 4 years. You know, these women oftentimes have been victimized for the majority of their life. And so it's going to take a long time for them to heal. We focus on, first, you might call it a detox. They have to get away from the thoughts, behaviors, and relationships that have held them in that kind of captivity. And that takes a good long season. It might be a good 9 months before she begins to believe that she's actually away from those things that have hurt her. And we work on academics, vocational development, spiritual, self-care, life skills. I'm very proud of the fact that we do a lot with education. You know, education is something that can be a game changer for people. You can bring people out of poverty with a good education. You can bring people into much greater self-esteem when they know that they're good at something and they find a place where their gifting meets, you know, something the world needs. And so we do a lot with education and vocational development so that when they leave our program, they are not as vulnerable as they were when they were originally trafficked.
Talking to Jean Allard, who is the director of the Institute for Shelter Care. Jean, are you seeing some of these women? You've been in this for a while. Are you seeing some of these women come back and start to help others?
Yeah, that's an exciting place. Now, 12 years in, we've now seen women who have gone and created a new life. They've established new relationships. They are becoming productive citizens in society and contributing, and then also feeling a need to make sense. I think that's true for, frankly, any of us who have lived through trauma, that we need to make sense of it. And part of the way that we can do that is by giving back to others. And so there are a fair number of what we call survivor leaders in this movement that are helping us to not only understand their experience, but also they can uniquely speak to the survivor population in ways that we can't.
Now, what's your long-term plan for the Institute for Shelter Care, say, looking 5 years, 10 years down the road?
Sure. So we started the Institute because what we identified was that there's a dearth of agencies that provide this kind of care across the United States. About 17 states have no shelters, 9 states have only one, and that is insufficient to meet the need. At the same time, there, in particular in the faith-based community, there's a great deal of interest in being helpful and wanting to do something about this problem. Right now, about 90% of all of the agencies that exist providing shelter care come from the faith-based sector. And so we're finding that people are wanting to do this work, but they don't know how. So we created a curriculum using the knowledge of not only survivors, but also the people who've been the forebearers of this work. And we've created an instructional curriculum to train people, how do you run a residential shelter for victims of trafficking? It's about a 2-year program. And at the end of that, we believe that they'll be ready to launch a program. Our big vision, thanks for asking, is we are on a path right now over the next 5 years to launch 27 shelters across the United States, and that has the potential of reaching about 1,200 survivors a year. And so it's really being a force multiplier in this movement.
So what can our listeners do to help your mission?
Well, certainly the financial support would be greatly appreciated because it largely is citizens that are paying for these efforts. You know, these women don't come in with anything, and it costs on average about $30,000 to $32,000 a year to provide comprehensive care for a single woman. And most of these agencies are operating as charities. And so if you have a shelter home in your area, it's highly likely that they could use your financial support. If you're coming from a faith perspective, absolutely your prayer support. I think everybody from a citizen perspective owes it to the survivor population to make better laws in the land. I come from a state where it's still a misdemeanor to traffic an adult, and that's a $500 fine, and frankly, she has to bring in $1,000 a night. So, you know, protecting her legally is not even as valuable as she can bring in criminally. So we've got it upside down, and I think that that's on us. We can change that.
And how can people find out more about your organization?
So they can visit www.instituteforsheltercare.org, or they can go to www.thesamaritanwomen.org.
Anything else before we close, Jean?
Thank you so much for bringing light to this issue.
Jean Allard, founder of the Samaritan Women Institute for Shelter Care. I'm Joe Fidelli for Community Close-Up, and we'll talk again next week.